Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Jacob Lidley. How are you, Jacob?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. You're the owner of Black Chalk Winery in Hampshire, one of the latest and newest wineries in the UK.
That's right. Yeah, we are brand new, launched 3 weeks ago at the Wines GB tasting in May. And we are 100% Hampshire, a very small family producer, and yeah, very exciting to be here.
So for the international listeners and people in the north of England, where's Hampshire?
Yeah, where's Hampshire? Well, the people in the north of England, I'm from the north myself, so I can kind of understand that because I'm not sure I knew where Hampshire was either. But if you leave London and almost go due south, slightly over to the west, it's about an hour away.
Is it the next county to the west of Sussex?
It is, yes. So the biggest cities in Hampshire would be Southampton and Portsmouth, which people are more likely to have heard of and maybe be able to pinpoint on a map. But we as a business are based around Winchester, which is famous for its chalk soils.
Yep. Or the whole south area is as well.
Indeed. In fact, the whole of the South Downs National Park runs up through Sussex and into Hampshire, and then spreads out into a huge plateau in Hampshire itself.
Is that the Salisbury Plain?
Salisbury Plains, yes.
Is that all chalk, all that?
A lot of it. I think it stops a little bit before you get over into Wiltshire, but you do get some going through. But certainly from the end of the National Park, as it spreads out through Winchester and into the Test Valley, you get a lot. It really broadens out and then stops over a bit further to the west.
And why is it called black chalk? Because chalk's normally white.
Yes. Well, this is a question we get asked a lot, and I think part of the branding idea, if you like, was to try and get people to ask that question. And certainly we've been asked it a lot in the last 3 weeks. Black chalk itself is actually a medium that artists used to use to sketch ideas onto canvas before they would go on to paint watercolors or oil paintings. And when we first started with this project, we felt that we were at the very beginnings creating ideas. But also when we saw the brand name written down and with the typical smudge that we have on the front label, which is kind of the artistic approach to winemaking, or to grab a little bit of that, we felt it was a very strong brand, a very modern brand, and it seems to have caught people's imaginations.
So you guys have been making some sparkling wines, but before we get into your wines, and your wines tend to be Pinot Meunier heavy. Well, I want to explore Pinot Meunier a little bit, if we can. But when did you set the winery up?
So if we roll back completely, I used to work up in London. My wife and I both lived and worked in London, and we went traveling. We went around the world, and we were in New Zealand, and we were in a vineyard drinking some New Zealand rosé and eating some Pinot Noir soaked cheese, and it was all a very romantic idea of what winemaking and viticulture could be, with a beautiful view of the mountains down there. When we came back, we started to notice what English wine was doing, and really got quite excited about the idea of being involved in that industry. We could do it on our doorstep. So we sat down in a pub in North London, and we decided that this was what we were going to try and do. So we both quit our jobs on the same day in 2009. Left London. I went to university to study to become a winemaker.
Plumpton,
went to Plumpton, studied viticulture and oenology. It was a big group that year, 2009, because it was just after the crash.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of people looking for a new direction. And what I did was I actually just stayed for 2 years and got out because I wanted to try and get into the industry as quickly as possible. And in 2011, I started working for Hattingley Valley, mm-hmm. who are based in Hampshire,
yep.
And who I still work for. I manage the winery at Hattingley, and we also make a lot of contract winemaking for other clients. And Black Chalk is one of those new contracts, but it's a completely personal project between me, my wife, and my brother-in-law, and my mother and father-in-law, Bill and Marilyn. And we basically sat down in 2015 and said, you know, let's try and do something. I was pleased with my experience to date and what I wanted to do, and I had an idea about making these wines that were 100% Hampshire, using more Pinot Meunier, and looking for a real purity of fruit. And so we said, let's go for it. And so the first wines are those that have just been released in the last few weeks.
Are they from your own fruit, or do you have your own
They're
vineyard?
Not, no, we don't have, it's one of the things about Blackrock at the moment that we're trying to solve, is we don't have a home. But that might change in the future. We currently source fruit from a few different vineyards in Hampshire, where I think there are particularly good vineyard managers, very good sites, and that I think the Meunier does very, very well. They're all chalk soils, and I think very good examples of what Hampshire can do in terms of viticulture.
Okay. Hampshire is down by the coast, so it's got some coastal influences.
I was going to say, it's not as coastal as maybe Sussex and Kent might be. Okay. Certainly in terms of the chalk soils, if you're looking at the South Downs, the other issue that Hampshire has is it's got the Isle of Wight sitting out just off the bottom of it, which actually protects Hampshire from more of that channel influence. And most of the chalk in Hampshire is a little further away from the coast than some of the other regions. So there are some risks involved in that, such as frost, which have to be managed very, very carefully. Certainly 2017 was a damaging year in terms of frost, but mm-hmm. not just for England and Hampshire, but also across the whole of the continent. Yeah. It brings a different challenge to what you get in some of the other counties. But, England's on the edge of what's possible, and we're aware of that. And done in the right way, the right methods, the right control of the vines, you can grow absolutely superb fruit.
So Blackchalk at the moment is almost a virtual winery, isn't it? So much as that you've got a brand, you're buying in grapes, you're using contract winemaking facilities to produce your wines that you're then retailing.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest, when I sat down in 2000, or when I left my job in 2009 and thought to myself, we want to create something ourselves, perhaps slightly naively underestimating the financial input that would be required in that. And I think it would stagger most people as to how much investment is required in a sparkling wine business, whether it would be in Champagne or whether it be over here. To look at different ways of trying to achieve that, such as buying grapes, virtual wine, creating a brand before you start to create a home, there's lots of ways to do it, and this one made the most sense to me. I was in a position where I could do this, a very fortunate position, where I had contact with growers and I could buy the fruit and use the facilities that I'm allowed at Hattingley.
Do you make the wine yourself?
I do. Yep. It's...
And you use their equipment for it?
Very much a... Yeah. I mean, the guys at Hattingley are very... very involved in the general winemaking, as they are with every client's wine that we make. And certainly the ethos that we instill there is a big part of why these wines are successful. But blending and things like that, I tend to take home and do it on the kitchen table and spend hours and hours and hours and hours doing it, because with a personal project, you can afford to do that. And tweaking and retweaking, it's a labor of love, and it's something that I feel very passionate about because it's mine, or ours, I should say.
So the first vintage was 2015, and you've had just released the wine. So the wine's been, what, 2.5 years on lees, roughly?
Yep, so 2015 was the first vintage. They went into bottle in March 2016, so they'll have had just over 20 months on lees. And then the wines today will have had 7 months on cork, which is really important. They're in style, they're very dry, but very well balanced, and trying to balance the fruit, a little bit of oak, and that acidity, that fresh English acidity that everybody knows very well, with the dosage is a real challenge. But that time on cork can't be underestimated. It really helps and shouldn't be forced. The more time they have on cork, the better the wines will be.
Listeners may not know, but when wines are aging with the dead yeast going through autolysis, they've actually got a beer cap on the end.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's completely, no oxygen gets in there. But as soon as you let the cork in, you do start to get a little bit of oxidation coming through.
You get you can get a little bit of oxygen through the beer cap. But
you can get a little bit.
And actually, you can buy different caps that allow different levels of oxygen. It depends on what style of wine you're making. But certainly, as soon as you go through the disgorging process, which is removing the yeast from the bottle, you obviously have oxygen interaction with the bottle, but then with the cork in place, you increase your oxygen uptake. And also you get a small amount of interaction between the wine and the cork itself, which can make a difference. Famously, not always positive, but it can be an interesting process for the wine itself.
Okay. One of the things you guys are advocating is a more Pinot Meunier heavy style of wines.
Yes.
I've tried your two wines. You've got a classic and you've got a rosé.
Yes.
And the classic I thought was very nice. It was, you know, a nice bit of fruit there, a little bit of autolysis flavors, not too much.
Nope.
I was wondering how long it was under on the yeast. The rosé was a little bit neutral, I thought.
Okay.
Maybe lacked a little bit of fruit, which was a surprise because normally you expect rosé to be a bit more fruity and less autolic.
Yeah.
But
so the reason that we have gone with Meunier as a larger proportion of each blend is I think that in England we're able to harvest it when it's ready. Famously, Pinot Meunier is used as a blending component in champagne, and it used as the backbone of the wines to add weight and texture. But in England, we get a little bit of the weight, but we also get a wonderful purity of fruit, and it retains the acidity. From what you're describing, as you could see that in the classic, but maybe not so much in the Wild Rose, which I'm wondering whether the Wild Rose is maybe a little bit cold when you tasted it, which can strip out some of the fruit. The Wild Rose in particular has 50% Pinot Meunier in there, and certainly the red fruit, or the wines have been blended to have a lot of that red fruit up front and to help balance the acidity with the weight of the Meunier. There's a little bit of oak in there, but not a huge amount.
In the classic?
In the classic and the Wild Rose.
Okay.
Certainly not noticeable.
No.
But again, it's about adding texture, to help balance the acidity.
In Champagne, Pinot Meunier is used mainly in Val d'Marne, if I recall, and because Val d'Marne is quite frost-prone.
Mm-hmm.
And because Meunier buds later and it ripens earlier as well, often you'll miss the frost at the end of the season and you've still got nice, fully ripened fruit at the end of the season. That's my understanding of it.
One thing, I went and worked in Champagne last year for vintage. First time I've ever been there, and it was a great experience. And one of the things that I took away from it was that in Champagne they declare a vintage. And they basically pick all of their fruit within 9 days. In England, if you tried to do that, you would be picking incredibly underripe Chardonnay and you'd be picking probably overripe Pinot Meunier. Now, I think there's an element of that in Champagne. Not all of these varieties are harvestable at their peak condition at the right times. In Champagne, I think, depending on the vintage, maybe it can be a bit overblown, the Meunier. But in England, we can pick the Meunier at the end of September or the beginning of October and leave the Chardonnay until almost November if we want. And so we have that ability to pick it when it's ready. Your frost point, I don't think anything buds late enough in England to warrant being completely frost-free. I can't remember what the latest recorded frost is in England, but it's definitely
September, October, probably in June.
Yeah. No, I mean at the beginning.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. But it's certainly if you're budding later and ripening sooner, then that's all for the positive, and it gives certainly from a business perspective that if you're more reliable crops, then that makes a lot of sense.
When I teach people, I normally tell them Pinot Meunier is like your insurance crop, you know, because if you get a wipeout and you take out your Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, you've still got grapes that could potentially be, you know, of good quality.
And again, I don't think that necessarily could be transferred to England. I don't think there's such a thing as an insurance crop in England. We just don't have a climate that allows. There's too many risks involved. The frost wiped out in some cases 60% of people's crop last year, which is just horrific from a business point of view. But
a lot of the top champagne producers, when they've got their sort of prestige cuvées, they don't tend to put a lot of Meunier in there. You know, Meunier is often used for the non-vintage type of wines. And a lot of people say that Meunier doesn't age as well as a Pinot Noir or a Chardonnay. What's your comment on that?
I think, I mean, going back to my original point of to what Pinot Meunier looks like in this country, having that bright red fruit, a little bit of texture, but retaining the acidity. And with wines, certainly sparkling wines, if you look at acidity as an indication of how well they'll age and what their longevity will be, then I think English Meunier is a different story. It's got more age to it. I certainly wouldn't have any problem with putting it down to reserve, for instance, which is uncommon, I think, in Champagne.
You mean a reserve wine holdback for non-vintage?
Indeed. It's definitely got the legs to do that. And certainly the wines that we're showing today are very fresh, very young in terms of their style, and that's exactly what we're aiming for. But I still think on cork in 24 to 36 months, they'll still be tasting very, very fresh and very young. Mm. And English wines, we're still trying to find out, you know, how long can you keep an English wine before it starts to tire, before it starts to go over the top. I'm still tasting wines that were, you know, riddled and disgorged in 2009 and on cork for 9 years now, and they're still tasting very, very fresh.
Yeah.
So there's a potential for English wines to have a lot longer bottle potential, aging potential, than some of the Champagne Noir.
Yeah, okay. There is a famous producer, I think it's Krug, who have a little bit more Meunier in their wines than most people expect. And Krug ages quite well. Some of the Krug
indeed, ages indeed. Very well. Not a bad brand to be compared to.
No, I don't think your wine tastes quite like Krug yet.
No.
Not yet. Okay, so you're looking for a vineyard, I presume, are you, or are you looking for a site?
We're certainly investigating what the future of Black Chalk's going to be. The family are very engaged with the with what's happening with it and the feedback that we've had to date. Ideally, yes, we'd like to find a home, and what that home will look like is up in the air a bit at the moment, but we hope to sort that out in the next 12 months.
Okay, so you may not even go down the route of actually owning your own sites. You might be very much an Australian model of buying fruit in.
Possibly. There's a lot of vines gone in the ground in England in the last 24 months, and again, I go back to the business model of and the expense required to plant vineyards and wineries. There is an argument to say that just putting a winery in and being a centre for winemaking rather than viticulture makes more sense.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, okay. There might be an argument for that. And there's certainly a lot of wineries doing contract winemaking for other vineyards. What is it? I read somewhere, I can't remember the figures. I'll have to ask Julian Trustamive, actually. What, there's something like 200 wineries and a shedload of vineyards.
Yeah, there's probably about 200 wineries and probably about 700 vineyards.
Yeah.
And the figures that I hear are that 2 million vines were planted in the UK last year.
Yeah.
What that converts to in terms of hectareage, which is probably more interesting, I'm not entirely sure. I think the figure of 2 million sounds more impressive, and that's why people have gone with it. But I think what it does tell you is that a lot of vines have been planted, whether they're by English investors or whether they're by the Champagne Noir themselves. And where all of those grapes are going to go in terms of winemaking is a question to be answered in 3 or 4 years' time when those vineyards start producing.
So, what is your attitude that maybe if there's a little bit of an oversupply, the price will be softer for you to be able to buy the fruit and therefore build your brand?
I don't know whether the price will be that much softer in the future. I think working with the right growers will be really important. I think those growers in the right science, more reliable, really producing good fruit, will be able to retain some of their pricing. You have to remember our pricing in this country is considerably lower than it is across the channel. Mm. And so it's not, you know, it's not ridiculous at the moment. It can be ridiculous in the poor years. Like last year, there was a lot of silly figures being thrown around. I can't see any sign currently of prices going much lower. Because growing's difficult.
Yeah,
the price of actually growing the grapes itself. We need to be covering those costs.
All right, Jacob. I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me.
Cheers, bud.
Bye bye.